Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to the Trampoline Hall podcast. I'm your host, Misha Globerman. Trampoline Hall, as you know, is a lecture series that takes place in a bar, usually in Toronto, sometimes in other cities. People give lectures on all kinds of subjects, with the one restriction being that they cannot speak on topics on which they are professionally expert. After each lecture, we take questions from the audience. This is the Trampoline Hall podcast. We have been doing the podcast now in these six-week mini seasons. This is the final week of the current season. This is the last podcast in the current season. All the episodes in this season were chosen by Margot Williamson, who went back through the Trampoline Hall archive and chose six episodes to make up this season. We'll be starting our next season on September 4th, and John McCurley will be choosing the lectures for that season. If you like the podcast and you're in Toronto, you should come out and see the show. You can join our email list. That's on our website to find out more about that. And for now, this is the final episode in the current season. It might contain mature language. And now let's go on to our final episode. Oh, wait, I have to tell you now. On this final episode, the lecturer is anonymous. She's chosen for reasons that might become clear by listening to the talk. And the topic is letters from my attorney.
For my student loan went to creditors, I was living in a collective house with three other people. It was in the days of shared landlines, the time of picking up the phone and not knowing who is calling, of getting to know one another's family, friends, and lovers through the random conversations we would have. Random, but regular. It was because of this shared object that all of my roommates over time became familiar with my numerous collection agents. They called many times a day. They would wake us up, disturb us, interrupt us. For some of us, creditors were sadly so an expected nuisance that simply came with getting an education. How mosquitoes and black flies accompany you in the woods when you're camping, the credit agents moved into our house in spirit, and no amount of reasoning made them disappear. At first I tried. I would tell them, look, I just do not have money right now. I would ask them nicely to back off and explain what it felt like to get these phone calls. But instead of listening, they started to threaten even more so. Luckily, though, the reality of being hounded by the credit agents was not something I was experiencing in isolation. But rather, it, like everything else, became a collective experience and a collective endeavor. We began to share the task of dealing with the creditors, and slowly over time, all of us developed our own way of doing so. Without even agreeing to it, we all started to mess with them in as many ways as was possible. The created personas that came to be when talking to the agents were spontaneous and natural, and oddly so, they were independently created of one another. The driving force behind all of them was the same, though, a deep and precise contempt of capitalism and a contempt of the little minion worker bees that kept that system intact and running. From the other side, the attempts of convincing me to start paying off my loan were varied like the agents themselves. They ranged from comically threatening to pure and terrifying. The thing that always remained the same was that our shared object ran nonstop. Some agents threatened and some did not. I remember one who, out of pure desperation, pretended to be a cop on the phone, claiming that if I did not make a payment or any sort of agreement to a payment, I would be taken away that very moment. Threats of possible legal persecution was a tactic utilized by many of them. It is because of this that over time, a fierce and fearless lawyer, Amy Puckwith, was born from my roommate Paul's imagination. Because Amy Puckett's creator was my roommate, I reap the rewards of having my own personal live-in lawyer. Amy Puckett, for the next year or so, represented me and other people who were plagued by collectors. She worked tirelessly. She wrote letters, made and answered phone calls, responded to threats, and unbelievably so confused the credit agents that some actually thought her to be a legit lawyer. One summer, I went away and an Australian backpacker sublet in my room. He had an accident serious enough that he couldn't avoid the hospital. And because of that hospital visit, he accrued a medical bill that eventually went to collections. By the time his bill went to collections, I was back and he had been long gone, up to some new place and new adventure. We started receiving threat letters from his collection agency in a tone like this. You have 5 days to make arrangements for payment or a civil lawsuit may be filed against you. To which Amy Puckett responded, also in a letter format, Dear Mr. Such and Such, please be advised that my client Such and Such doesn't like your attitude and does definitely not care about your threats. Later on, she continues, and so here are some more rock-solid legal arguments I have come up with on behalf of my client. Number one, am I to assume by your frequent attempts to contact Monsieur Such and Such at 61 Nassau Street, Toronto, Ontario, that this is the residence in which you believe him to reside? And if so, what would you say to the news that it is in fact not? Uh-oh. And also, can I assume correctly that your reaction to the following news that my client is not in Toronto, not even Ontario, would be a slackening of your jaw and perhaps the accidental dropping of a pen or pencil? A pen or pencil that you have previously wielded great control over. Uh-oh, I think you dropped something, Mr. Stone. In point of legal fact, my client is far, far away in a land that the United States has yet to give democracy to. Okay, so my client is probably sipping on some locally favored beverage, perhaps relaxing on some sort of beach, if the country in question does indeed have beaches. I'm, of course, not at the liberty to divulge that particular And perhaps he wishes to pass on to you that he's having a very nice time. Not all collection agents fell for Amy Puckett's schemes, but some definitely did. I would have agents saying things like, as was confirmed by your legal representative, Ms. Puckett, or on our records it shows that your lawyer, Ms. Puckett, has laid claims to such and such. The power of Ms. Puckett was that she appropriated the very language of the agents, directly poking fun at the tactics that they employed, seeing through and to the bottom of their threats and mocking them. If a credit agent loses the power to evoke fear, then they become powerless and a failure in their profession. The most accomplished agent knows that fear is the most powerful tool of manipulating people into doing what you want them to. I spoke to the agents as a 90-year-old Eastern European grandma that had no short-term memory, but that had a faint recollection of my granddaughter that sought after Dabrila. When an agent would ask if Dabrila was at home, I would one day claim that she had moved to Switzerland some 40 years ago. The next day I would say that she's out to getting a driver's test right now, or that she was right here beside me, but that I needed the phone, so I would just hang up on the phone. The aim was always to annoy them and infuriate them as much as they were annoying and infuriating me. You tell your granddaughter that she can go to jail for this. Who in jail? Tell your granddaughter I'm going to find her. I'm going to find her and put her in jail. You going to jail? No. No. letters in jail? No, she's not in jail now, and so on. Sometimes my roommates would pretend to be me, and sometimes I would pretend to be them. I remember one morning my roommates picked up the phone, not even being fully awake. I heard her say, "This is her." Then after a short pause, I heard, "Shame on you. This is your job? Good job you have scaring poor people." The regular phone calls and letters were a persistent intrusion of such a sinister sort onto our lives, a constant reminder of how poverty is an industry and how so many people make a living on the backs of the poor. People parasites just doing their jobs, utilizing any tool possible. Fear and guilt being the most prevalent one. A collection agent once even threatened that he was going to put my dog down when he heard my friend's dog barking in the background. Yeah, because he was like, "You obviously can't afford a dog, so I'm going to kill your dog." Then there was the time a credit agent who had been trying to get a hold of me for weeks finally succeeded while I was at work. It was past midnight, and he sounded hammered, slurring his words. It was our first official phone call. Usually each collection agent stayed on my case for a while so we would all get to know each other. I was caught off guard, so I admitted that I was myself. "Yes, it's me. Do you know who I am?" No. "I'm the big shark in the sea and you're a little puny fish." I looked out the window worried that some man was across the street at the Greek bar looking into the empty bar that I was working in. "No, I'm pretty sure I'm not a fish." He hangs up. Next shift, same thing. Except this time he was a big, strong elephant and I a little puny ant. When I asked him for his real name, he hung up. I thought it strange that he knew when I was working, but then I found out that he called my work about 5 times a day, and that everyone had at least one weird conversation with him. Anyways, eventually, I and my roommates became experts on all of the rules governing the relationship between the indebted and the pursuers. I felt more at ease knowing that they couldn't take me to jail on the spot, or take my mother to jail, or deport me, all real threats. Nor could they wait for me outside my work, threaten to hurt me, and yes, they had no authority to put my friend's dog down. Amy Puckett had something to say to the wound-up, tight, and aggressive agents. She advises the following. It could certainly be considered legal advice in the sense that it is certainly not illegal to advise a person in such a matter. I believe, speaking as one best man to another now, that you need to relax. She concludes the letter by saying, should you choose to carry on with your whining, cock-a-doodle, dotting, braying, and moaning, my client and I will think of something and sue you for it. It will be big time, big deal, you will be sorry. Until you cock-a-doodle. The day we got our eviction notice is when I finally decided to go quiet. For a while, I was desperately trying to figure out different ways of shaking the collection agencies and to rid myself of my debt. My plan was very thought out. I figured that over time, the value of my loan would diminish, being passed from one agency to another. I stubbornly persevered, knowing that if I let enough time pass, that it would be easy to settle my debt at a very low price. I aimed to remain quiet for 20 years, but I lasted 17. The idea was that I had to become basically useless to them. This is how you do it. The creditors could not have an inkling of hope that I was ever going to be able to pay them back, or that they could get any money from me, such as confiscating my tax returns. I also could not, for instance, be hiding out from my student loan, but making regular payments on other bills. This would have constituted an inkling of hope. There's a window of time after which a collection agency has very little power. It is anywhere between 6 and 15 years. So I laid low and waited it out, but keeping in mind, even verbally admitting on the phone that you have a debt to them sets the clock back. I was surprised that after 17 years, so finally I figured out which collection agents had my file. And so I called them one day, and I told the person on the phone that I wanted to settle. And it's usually really hard to settle on student loans. But she got really excited. I offered her $2,000, and she said four. And she said this was not negotiable, and I had 3 days to pay her. So then I borrowed the money from a bunch of my friends and did my taxes for all of that time, paid her the money, and then with my tax return I paid back my friends, and then it was done.
You're listening to the Trampling Hall Podcast. I'm Misha Goldman. Up next, with Q&A.
Are there any questions? Yeah, we'll go to you. Yes, question. Yes, I am.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
What was the original amount that you owed?
Close to 30,000. And then at some point there was like all the interest. So eventually, I'm not really sure what it ended up with. But I just, because I was doing the speech, I actually looked into what my ended thing was that I was settling on. I was thinking, oh, it's 60,000, but it was actually only 4,300. So it devalued so much. And so kind of like the woman that I negotiated with, she kind of tricked me because I could have probably pushed.
So you regret that you overpaid? Do you really? There's another question. Did you have one? Yes. The same question. Okay, all right. Anyone else? Anyone else? Any other questions? Yes, you ma'am. Yes.
How is
Amy Puckwith's last name spelled?
On the invite to this, like you got it. Did you get
I think it's on the program.
Oh, is it? On the back of the program, you'll see a letter, and it's the envelope that she used to send. So it's Puckwith.
Whoa! Yeah. Did you ask? Did you ask because you want to look her up and engage her services? Is that why?
Is that a real last name?
Is that a real last name?
No, it's my. It's the persona. It's the persona my roommate Paul created in order to talk to people.
And you were like, oh yeah, because you were like.
Mrs.
Puckwith,
yeah, yes.
Mrs. Puckwith, Puckwith, you're like, yes.
Not Fuckworth.
Not to be confused with the Fuckworths who do not exist. The Puckwiths are, and did you think of Fuckwith? Was that what you guys thought of? I thought it was like so Canadian. I was like, Puckwith. Like I was like the most Canadian thing. She has the puck. Like she, that's where the power resides. But I guess that's what makes it a great name. Yes, yes, you know. Did Paul write all the letters,
yeah.
Or was there a firm of lawyers?
It was just one.
Just you. That was you. You were just the entirety of Amy Puckwith.
But you have the persona of the concerned citizen called Mr. Popcorn, right?
Also, the concerned citizen called Mr. Popcorn?
Who also writes letters sometimes.
What, was it in the same? Was it also in the collection agencies thing, or somewhere else?
Popcorn didn't write collection agencies.
So Mr. Popcorn is just
a concerned
citizen.
But there was a suggestion to the police force to exchange it with the whole canine unit to get rid of the human beings and only have dogs. Am I putting you on the spot? Right now?
Yeah. All right. Any other questions? Yes. Yes, you, ma'am. Yes.
Did you have other personas?
Yeah.
Did you have other personas?
Oh, there were so many. There were was so many things going on. It was a collective house, and so basically four of us lived there, but actually maybe 20 of us lived there. And like everybody just had the go-ahead to do whatever they wanted, right? So like whenever there was a sometimes like one of my roommates, she would just have these really intense, long conversations, kind of a bit flirty. I don't know, like there was like all sorts of things going on. Yeah, many different people. It was just meant to confuse them.
All right, okay. All right. Yes, ask you, ma'am.
What was the debt for?
What was the debt for?
Oh, just my student loan.
No, but what was your, like, education? Like,
what did you learn?
Oh, yeah.
Is the question. Is that the...
I did 2 years at Concordia for creative writing, and then I did 2 years at Ryerson for film, but didn't complete either one of those.
Okay, does that answer your question?
Yes.
Certainly does. Yes, you, ma'am, yes.
Did you get a sense of did it feel anonymous, or did you have a real...
It wasn't anonymous. It was a bit different than I think it works now, because we would have one agent, I say we, there was an agent that would call on us repeatedly. So sometimes you would have the same agent for 3 months, and then they would get switched over.
So you have like an ongoing...
Have a relationship. So the agents wouldn't have a relationship, it would just be like a new
employee calling. Oh, so they would be between one agent and the next, you mean?
Yeah. Or like, did you get a sense that they were enjoying...
Oh, I feel like there was some kind of like relationships that kind of formed between people.
Yeah.
There was this person, God's Gift, who I didn't have a chance to. There was this collection agent's God's Gift. He was kind of the most memorable one.
The agent was called God's Gift?
Yeah.
Is it possible that was also the same person who was Mr. Popcorn and Amy Puppet? Like the whole thing? You're just taught your one roommate talking to himself.
I had of other collection agents. I had a feeling that once a new collection agency gets your file, they probably give your file to a kind of not so aggressive person. But the way it worked back then is that they would just call you repeatedly for about 3 months. And then when they would be about to sell off your debt to a new agency, then they would put like a really aggressive kind of shark character who threatened you and did all sorts of things. And if you didn't cave into that, eventually, after about a year, I would assume a new credit agency got your file.
Wow. Yeah. And would you have like, and you'd have like an ongoing relationship with like the same person?
Oh yeah, the same people called you every single day.
Did you ever get any sense into like any window into like what any of them, like did you ever like catch any glimmer of like what their lives were like or
oh,
what
yeah,
they
yeah,
were
yeah.
like?
Oh yeah, I know. Like sometimes I would ask them, "Don't you own any debts?" Like. And stuff like that, and find out that they, of course, own debts.
Sure.
And then they were like doing this because they had to pay off their debts. So.
Yes, you sir.
So it was 17 years, right? So did you notice trends? Like, as like, hey, there's like a new hip thing they're doing now, Trends Magazine.
did you notice any like up and coming trends in collection strategies over these 20 years? Like, what's hot? What's hot in collections these days?
Some people really got into psychology, right? And they would study tactics that probably prison guards study or like interrogation agents study. You know, and so I noticed like these things that they would do, for instance, like they would terrify you and then they would give you a way out, right? It's kind of like bad cop, good cop, right? So the bad cop comes in and freaks you right out, and then the good cop is like, oh, you're safe though, you're okay, this is what you gotta do, right? So there's like a lot of like psychological things that I was, and as I said, like everybody had their own thing they were doing, but you could definitely tell people who got hyped on psychology and wanted to.
So you'd say that's like the latest one would be the application of psychology.
Yeah.
Specifically good cop, bad cop.
Oh, yeah.
As the psychological, all right, okay. Yeah. So there you go. Yes, sure.
What was the hardest thing about hiding out for 17 years?
What was the hardest thing about hiding out for 17 years?
It's actually really hard. People are very skeptical when you pull out a wad of cash to pay for like first and last month's rent. Because like I only dealt in cash.
Did you not have a phone account or something?
Did you have a phone?
I had like a what? No.
So you didn't have a phone. You didn't have
nothing.
You have a bank account. You didn't have a bank account.
Nothing.
You're just trying not to exist.
My phone was under somebody else's name, so I was had to remember who that person was. Everything was under other people's name.
Whoa.
But yeah, it was really hard.
Well, all right. Cool. Yes. Yes, you, ma'am. Yes.
Were Amy Puckwitz
Were Amy Puckwith's letters typed or handwritten? Ask the designer in the back.
Who was?
That was that woman back there, Amanda.
Okay. It was handwritten, but the best thing too was that the letterhead completely matched the letterhead of the collection agency. So people could communicate the letterhead except add like Amy Puckwith in it.
Was it the same? Wait, the same letterhead in that? Like they kept the logo, or they?
Appropriated the logo.
And would they not? They wouldn't notice that.
Some people like knew it was a joke, but some people actually took it seriously.
Amazing. Wow. Okay. Yes, up there. Yeah.
How has your life changed now that you don't have this debt?
How has your life changed now that you don't have this debt?
I don't know, it just now I can plan for things a bit differently. It's not like there's this thing looming over my head. And I was always actually kind of secretly afraid that they were going to do things like restrict my travel, or that new rules were going to come in effect. Like, for instance, that you can't leave the country if you own this much debt, or things like that. So I feel a sense of relief for myself. But for other people, I feel really angry. I just feel like, I mean, probably many people in this room have debts over their heads, right? So it's just such a shitty way of starting up, like, a society or a community, you know?
Yeah. And so what's different now? Is it just relief, or is it... How long is it since you've not had
it? Oh, it wasn't that long. It was, like, 2 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so do you live differently? Like, are you...
Well, I mean, when I first got a bank account, they wouldn't even give me a debit card. So it was kind of like... similar, I had to kind of work with cash, but no, it's a huge sense of relief. It's amazing. Yeah, I mean, I just got a phone under my name a month ago, and it felt like it was like something to celebrate.
Sure.
Yeah.
No, yeah. Yes, yeah, over there. Yes, you sir.
Were you at all nervous that while doing this talk, one of the collection?
Were you worried one of the collection agencies would be here at the talk?
Yeah, you know what? That's why I kept the names out, because I actually was like, oh, the names were so funny. Like, the names that... Because Amy Puck would also give nicknames to the collection. But then I was like, oh, no, not worried. Yeah.
Well, I guess in part because you're immune to them now, or because you figured they wouldn't be here, or both?
Oh, yeah. No, they could be here. I don't know. But not my collection agents. Maybe somebody who has a job.
Wait, why do you think your collection agents wouldn't be here?
I don't know. I
like to think of the show as appealing to collection agents, but that's they would like its whimsical character. I don't know.
Anything's possible.
All right. Okay. Just in case, is there anybody here who is one of the Brilla's collection agents who would choose to identify themselves at this particular moment? It seems very unlikely, but it would be awesome. So just in case. All right. Okay. That's an unexpected. Yeah. Okay. Yes. Yes. You have a question. Oh, have you ever thought of consulting to collection agents to share your tricks with them so as to make them more powerful, a goal which you clearly would be psyched about?
No.
No, okay, all right. All right. Yes, you ma'am.
Do you have to file 17 years of taxes?
Do you have to file 17 years of taxes now?
I did that 2 years ago, yeah.
So yes, you went and you filed 17 years of taxes?
Yeah.
Oh my God, what's that like?
It was my partner's uncle who did it, and I look really sketchy officially, because like there's nothing that traces me back to a place or a time. So there's like some random moments, but it definitely looks like I did some kind of illegal activity.
Right.
Because I mean, he would just be like, "How did you survive?"
Was he like upset, or I would think like in some ways as an accountant you might be very impressed by like doing what you did. Like was there an element of that, or
I think he was a bit impressed.
That's good. Is it? All right, cool. I'll go to you. Yes, you ma'am. Yes.
When did you and Amy Puckwith part ways?
You're assuming they have parted ways.
Well, like the character Amy Puckwith.
The character. I guess it was like when I went quiet. Like when I just like closed everything down. Yeah.
Is that right? So is Amy Puckwith not? Has she no longer practicing? Is she? She...
Yeah, I guess that's accurate. Yeah.
But that's okay. There's no more. There you won't be hearing. We're not currently hearing any more from Amy Puckwith.
All right, that's too bad. Okay, anything else? Oh, yes, you, ma'am, yes. How did you do it? What was it like not having a bank account? You're just like, I can't imagine, right? What if you, how would you use the Interact Tap feature without a bank account? For instance?
It was really hard, but I had like a system in my, I bartended for 25 years, right? So that was.
So you still in cash?
So
yeah,
tell her
everything
cash.
Was in cash. And in my closet, I kind of had a savings account. And it was like in different pockets of different jackets. And then right at the front was my pants, which had my kind of like immediate cash that I needed. And then I had a piece of paper and I kind of tallied things.
Whoa.
So, but I mean, I had to, if I had checks, I had to cash them through friends' accounts, which is very hard to do nowadays. And then sometimes I would have to ask my bosses to sign things, not to me, but to other people. Anyways, I'm not
going to
get into
everything. Does that give you a picture? You really seem like you seem amazed.
I am.
All right, okay, well, good.
It's only really difficult because people don't trust you if you're dealing with cash. So even if you're buying something that's like, I don't know, a bike that's $300 or something like that, people don't trust that you're handling cash so much.
People think there's something suspicious if you come in and you want to pay for something
and
it's an expensive purchase, you want to pay in cash. People are like, what's wrong?
Oh, yeah.
Is this person perhaps hiding out
and
trying to not exist in society and conceal their identity and not leave any trace is something they might think of you for some reason. Yes, yes, you, sir.
Have you considered consulting for people who are looking to go off the grid?
People who want to go off the grid?
Yeah, I mean, for sure.
You have considered it?
Well, I mean, the thing is, that it's just so hard. So I was thinking, actually, would I even advise anybody to do this? It's like, it's really hard to get jobs, to...
Well, there are murder convictions, you have to.
Yeah.
Would you say there are murder convictions? Well, I suppose you'd be like, that would be someone who would be willing to, for it would be on balance worth it, to be like, oh, it's somewhat inconvenient, not having access to banking services, but it's also inconvenient having to serve a prison term for murder. On balance, I'd rather go off the grid. Is that what you're thinking of?
In that case, I would do it.
You would? Okay. So, to take this from the hypothetical to the actual, are you saying this because you or someone you know is a murderer who would like help going off the grid? Just wink twice if the answer is yes.
I can only comment through my lawyer, Amy Perkins.
Only comment through your lawyer, Amy Puckwith. Thank you. All right. Anything else? Yes. I'll go to you, sir. Yeah, you, sir. Sure. You. With that, yeah.
Curious about what the experience was trying to skirt the government of Canada around taxes.
So what was it like trying to not pay your taxes for 17 years? You asked. Only hypothetically.
So some things I'm just not going to get into right now. Just because everything is being recorded.
But so, but what was it? All right, okay. Is there anything you can say about it?
Were the collection, like people who would contact you from the government, were they similar to the people who
did you? Oh, that's.
As in, like, nobody could contact me anywhere, not even the government.
So they didn't. The government couldn't even find you.
Yeah, until like now.
Now that it says on the Trampoline Hall website, right? All right. Yes, you, ma'am. We'll go to you. Yes, you have an interview. Yes. So the question is, you were going to disappear for 20 years, you almost made it, and then right at 17, I'm rephrasing it a little bit, then at 17 you quit. That's not really what you said, but I'm giving it a bit of a spin. How come? What made you fall short of your goal?
It was just so random. I didn't even think about it much. I woke up one day and I was like, oh, I wonder what would happen. The tricky thing is, though, you can't acknowledge that you have a debt. So I found out who had my, and I was like, if it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't. So I just called, and the woman said we negotiated to $4,000, which was shocking to me.
How do you do that without acknowledging every debt? You just call them and be like, hey, I thought it'd be cool to give you guys some money. No reason.
No, I was just like, hey, so I hear that you have a file for such and such a person.
Right.
And then I said.
So you don't say that you are that person.
No.
Right.
So then later I can be like, oh, I don't even know who that is.
Right.
But then afterwards called it herself, which is something I often do.
Right. Is there?
And then when she agreed and all this stuff, she was basically saying, well, she said, like, nobody else would do this for her. But anyway, so I hung up the phone, and
right.
then I called her back as myself.
Right.
And I think, like, she knew, but I... So we worked it out, and I got the money that day, and I paid her, and then the rest.
Cool. All right, amazing. Anything else? Oh, yes, you back there, yes.
Did you pay her in cash?
Did you pay in cash?
No, because the money wasn't even mine, so it went through somebody else's bank account.
Okay. Right. Yes, over there, yes. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so if they call you and they're like, you owe $30,000, what do? You just like, no?
They call you and they say, you owe $30,000, you just say what, no?
You just really act stupid. Because you can't acknowledge that. And even like there's tricky things, like credit agencies will pay into your debt. Like let's say 15 years have passed. Sometimes they will pay into your debt. So that they start the clock going again.
Whoa.
Yeah, they're really tricky.
That's weird. Right? That's crazy.
Yeah, yeah. So then, I mean, that's illegal and you can fight it, but there's all sorts of things.
So you just kind of just don't engage, is like your thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Cool. Yes, I'll use her. Yeah, sure. You.
How did you find out who had your file?
Oh, I think I can't remember, but you can call, I think, Equifax or one of those agencies, and then they tell you exactly like who you owe, how much money to, and what their name and address is and stuff like that. They have a whole list, right?
All right, there you go. Yes, you sir.
I feel really bad asking, but do you feel like divulging what your credit score was at that point?
Do you know what your credit score was?
As I said, it was so bad that my bank wouldn't even give me a debit card. Right, but it's been 2 years and now it's up above average, which I don't really understand.
It's above average?
I don't understand why. It turns out because I settled on a loan, I look better on paper.
I think I'd like to end on that weirdly optimistic piece of news. Let's wrap it up there. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. That was the final episode of this season. We will be back on September 4th with a brand new season. All the lectures there will be chosen by John McCurley. Trampoline Hall was created in Toronto in the 21st century by Sheila Hetty and is hosted by me. This episode's lecture was originally chosen by Eula Benevolsky, and all the episodes in this season were handpicked by Margot Williamson. The podcast is produced by Josh Block. Our theme music was composed by Matt Smith. Kate Bars is the coordinating producer, and our podcast intern is Quinton Bradshaw. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. You can also find us on Twitter and Facebook. If you enjoyed the podcast, it really helps us out if you leave a review or rating on iTunes. We'd appreciate that. I'm Misha Globerman. Thanks for listening.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.